A Very Quidditch Christmas by Mem. Read by CookieMom6067. By December of Nicky's first season with the Guard, the team is steadily climbing their conference rankings. He is leading the league in beater stats, and he is officially losing his mind over Yusuf Alkezani. He should have seen it coming, really. Should have foreseen it last season and told his agent to avoid negotiating a trade to the Guard completely. He's holding it together for games, but outside of it, good God. If Joe didn't stop looking like, or looking at Nicky like, well, Nicky might just spontaneously combust. Luckily, his job involves a lot of working out, and so far he's been able to channel any frustration that way. The distraction, though, that's a problem. He's had a few close calls now during practice, where he caught Joe doing something theatrical and couldn't look away. Actually, that's a lie. He'd almost flown into Niall one particularly embarrassing time when Joe had simply looped around him and smiled. Niall had veered out of his way with a snort, and it's a testament to how wonderful she is that she hasn't ribbed him for it. Much. The distraction, unbidden and unexpected, is a little terrifying. Before this, Nicky has never been distracted. Quidditch has always been the singular driving force in his life, and he's proud of that. People make a lot of fuss about how much the sport takes from an athlete's life, but as far as Nicky is concerned, it's a goddamn privilege that's also a fantastic excuse to minimize other nuisances, such as family drama, high-maintenance friendships, and other committed relationships. He's seen teammates struggle with nagging family members and crying partners, seen them miss practice and games for unforeseen circumstances that have them unfocused for weeks. It's always a hassle. It's not that Nicky doesn't understand it, theoretically. It's not that he can't see the boon of having a wider support structure outside of the team, or the appeal of having someone to come home to. He quietly loves family flight days, where team and crew bring their kids onto the pitch, but he also understands the stress that external parties bring, and he feels their lives are already stressful enough. He's always had his Quidditch family, whether that be the Italian cohort or his current league team, and he's done everything else on his own for so long he can't imagine it any other way. He doesn't think he's done too bad of a job, either, if he does say so himself. So yes, the distraction is questionable. What's more questionable is how little he seems to mind it. Usually when something starts to shake his concentration, he identifies it and cuts it off as fast as possible. The last significant distraction he'd had was probably at 21, when his family had tried to get back in touch after he'd won his first championship. Even then, he thinks he'd managed to detach from it fairly quickly. At 26, it's only a sore point now if he thinks about it too long, which he doesn't day to day. Considering how bad he'd felt during, Nicky calls that a win. But with Joe, Nicky doesn't just not mind the distraction. He really, really likes it. And that's maybe the most terrifying thing of all. Usually he'd be annoyed at anyone joking around so much during practice or throwing off his tailored schedule with impromptu plans all the time. Instead, he finds himself laughing so openly he snorts, which is embarrassing, and perking up every time he gets a message from Joe that says, "Yo, dinner?" Or, "Found a movie I think you'd love?" Or simply, "Hey, you all good?" Maybe he doesn't mind it because they're playing so well, both individually and as a team. Nicky has always held too much tension in his body when he plays, which affects his swing. Maybe being a little more relaxed is optimizing his play. But that makes him worry about the inevitable downturn, how he'll feel if it seems his fun with Joe is detracting from his performance. It makes him worry that he isn't worried enough to put an end to it. Quite the opposite, in fact. It's all very confusing. Nicky can't say for sure when things had switched from, oh shit, I nearly killed you, to, oh, friends? To whatever they are now. It had crept up on him over last season, too slow to be caught, and then seemingly accelerated in one fell swoop. His excitement at being traded to the Guard was maybe an easy signpost, but he'd never have been so thrilled if it wasn't for how he already felt around Joe, he's sure. When he tries to unpack what those feelings are, however, his brain seems to short-circuit a little. So he just doesn't, and lets himself bask in the warmth that Joe brings to everyone around him. He is, Nikki thinks, rather like the sun. Only a fool wouldn't want to orbit around him. He hadn't noticed it during their sporadic hangouts, but frequent messaging over last season. But now he's around Joe almost every day. It feels like gravity, inevitable and inescapable. It's about here, when he starts thinking in similes, that he has to stop himself. Joe is the poet, not him. Joe is the one who waxes lyrical about anything and everything, the one who compliments Nikki so casually he can't deflect it, but so beautifully it makes Nikki's heart squeeze. He could listen to Joe talk for hours. The strange thing is that it seems Joe could listen to Nikki talk for even longer. It still surprises him, even though Joe has always been patient with him, even when Nikki loses his train of thought from the way Joe watches him, chin propped on one hand, leaning in close. Nikki has never had anyone give him such undivided attention, unless you counted reporters, which he very much did not. No. Joe listens to him like every word Nikki says is precious, even when he knows Joe doesn't care about stats as much as he does. Joe has the unnerving ability to make Nikki very honest, and he thinks it'll get him in trouble one of these days. Funnily enough, he doesn't think he'll mind doing that with Joe either. During their first practice in December, Andy sidles up to Joe during his water break and says, "So, how's that professional hard-on going?" Joe nearly spits water all over her. "What?" he sputters, and then catches her pointed look upwards to where Nikki is doing target practice with Ferreira. Joe had, of course, been watching him, but you know, he's allowed. They stand in silence for a moment, watching Nikki spiral into a smooth swing that echoes like music across the pitch. Andy lets out a quiet sigh, and Joe gives her an incredulous look. "You're impressed," he says, crossing his arms, "and you're giving me grief." Andy just smirks at him. Joe subsides, fighting the urge to pout. He knows exactly why she's able to tease him, and there's no point denying it. "Okay," he says grudgingly, "you were 80% correct." "Only 80?" she says, eyebrow raising. "I didn't think your mass was that bad, Alkizani." "Well, it's actually been great for our gameplay," Joe says. Nikki rolls to hit two bludgers in perfect succession, and he resists the urge to pour his water directly over his head. "So you can't fault me for that." "If that's the case," Andy says, "are you going to tell him?" "That I," Joe says, and then lowers his voice as the chasers jog past, Nile casting them a curious look. "I mean, I want to. But, Andy says, and her expression turns serious, a little distant. "I know." Joe lets her stand in silence for a moment. It's his fourth season with the guard now, and he's never had a relationship with a coach like he has with Andy. She's a player's player, a legend in the air, but as human as they are on the ground. Joe remembers watching her play as a child, remembers her vanishing for a decade after Quinn, only to return, tight-lipped and staunch, to drag the guard back into relevance. He's lucky to have come in when he had, to be welcomed into a team that's steadily on its way back to glory. Joe would happily play for Andy and the guard until he retires, and that's hopefully a long, long way off. "I want to let him settle in a bit more first," Joe says, and Andy nods. "The trade's still fresh, and I don't want to mess with that. And if it goes wrong..." He grimaces, the mere thought of it making his gut twist. Andy laughs, but it's a soft sound. "I don't think you have to be overly worried about that," she says. "But I'm glad you're thinking about it." She smiles, a smirk returning to her expression. "My, my, Yusuf, so mature now. It's nice to see Genovese's good influence rubbing off on you. Although I'm sure you wish something else was rubbing off on..." Joe yelps and smacks at her, just as Nikki lands neatly beside them, eyebrows raised. His hair is windswept, flush high on his cheeks, and Joe forgets about everything else for a split second. "He giving you grief, coach?" Nikki asks Andy, who grins at them both. "Just talking about how well you two are rubbing off on each other," she says, because she's still a player at heart, and that includes the goddamn humor. Nikki, bless him, doesn't seem to catch the innuendo and just nods, looking pleased. "Yes, I think we've both improved a lot," he says seriously, and Joe can see Andy biting the inside of her cheek to keep from laughing. "Although I dare say I've had the greater impact. All Joe does is distract me." "Oh, so you find him distracting?" Andy asks, and Nikki pauses. Joe can almost see the cogs turning in his head, trying to balance the banter he's established with Andy and the knee-jerk reaction to not admit weakness in front of your coach. Andy takes pity on him and waves a hand. "I'm just kidding," she says. "He's not pretty enough for that." Nikki opens his mouth like he's going to, what, agree or defend? But Andy seems to have done enough shit-stirring for one day and mounts her broom. Nikki straightens immediately. "Got enough energy for a round with me?" Andy asks, and Nikki shoots Joe a smile before kicking off after her, so fast he's a blur. Joe tries not to sigh like a wistful teenager and finishes his water. Life is so difficult sometimes. December is always hectic. Holiday season brings a slew of public events, while players try to snatch more time with family and friends. The Guard are slated to play over Christmas, which means pushing the team holiday party forwards. "Are you still all right to host?" Andy asked Joe in November. "I know you and Booker usually organized it together." Her mouth twists and Joe mirrors her expression. Booker's trade still sits painfully between them, and it certainly will be odd this year. Booker has always been the backbone of social events, always prepared with antics and alcohol. He'd also known a lot more about hosting logistics. "I'll figure it out," Joe says. Andy nods and says, "Maybe ask Nikki to help," as if Joe hadn't already been thinking of that. Nikki's expression does something funny when Joe brings it up. "Doesn't front office usually oversee that?" he asks, and Joe nods. "Yeah, we definitely need their help. But I like to be across it, considering it's at mine," he says. "It's a really homely thing, you know? Everyone brings their families. All the team and crew are together." He smiles at Nikki, hoping he already feels what Joe means, several months into his trade. "It's something I really love about the Guard. We're as close off the pitch as we are on it, with everyone." "I've noticed," Nikki says, sitting down at the kitchen counter. He's a familiar fixture in Joe's house by now. Joe can't remember the last time Nikki hadn't popped by between practices. "It's interesting." "Hmm?" Joe asks, setting Nikki's tea down in front of him. Nikki's fingers brush over his as he takes the mug, and Joe almost feels like he scalded himself. "How so?" "I've only been with two other league teams," Nikki says, "and they've been great, truly. But the way the Guard is," he looks at Joe over the rim of his mug, "it's different. And I think it's what you said, the familiar thing." "We have that rep for a reason," Joe says, smiling. He's quite proud of it, really, and he's determined to maintain it even with Booker gone. He wants Nikki to feel it as he had. He wants Nikki to have a home here, with him, with the team. "Hmm," Nikki says, and Joe leans forward on the counter, catching his gaze. "What is it?" he asks, and Nikki shakes his head. He's not dismissing Joe, though, only thinking. Joe is always happy to wait. It gives him a good excuse to just look at Nikki, watch the way his mouth purses as he thinks, eyebrows furrowing slightly. When they'd first started hanging out, Joe had found him hard to read. Over a year later, Nikki is like his favorite crossword puzzle. Joe dares say he's pretty good at solving him by now. "I think," Nikki says, and he glances at Joe like he's wary of his response. "I think it can be dangerous, a team being too close." Joe tilts his head, trying not to jump to conclusions. Nikki's words send a slight chill through his skin, even with the fire going. "How so?" he asks, intentionally light. "Surely it's just better for cohesion." "Well, yes," Nikki says, inclining his head. "And I think you can definitely see it in the Guard's play when things are going well, but..." He pauses, glancing at Joe again before looking away. There's a fine line between being close and being professional, isn't there? Fuck. Sure, Joe says, very carefully. But I wouldn't say the guard is unprofessional. Have you felt that in your time with us so far? Nikki pauses for so long, Joe almost starts to sweat. No, he finally says. I don't believe so. It's just more than I've experienced before is all. Barring maybe Team Italy, but that's always a bit different. For sure, Joe says, nodding. And every team in the league is different. We're just closer than most, I guess. Yes, Nikki says. Joe can't tell if he's blushing or just red from the steam of his tea. And for the most part, it works very well. I enjoy it, he says. And then adds, so quick Joe almost misses it, I enjoy it a lot. That's great, Joe says, smile widening. Nikki shoots him a quick smile back, but he has more to say, Joe can tell. A few moments later, Nikki opens his mouth again and says, but when it goes badly, it can really affect the whole team. Events off the pitch affect us more during play, and that's dangerous. Such as? Joe asks, and his throat feels a little tight, voice a little nervous. He's increasingly worried about where Nikki's taking this, and yet can't help but ask. Nikki looks at him for a long moment before saying, Booker, for example, obviously affected the team a lot, even though trades are commonplace in any major league sport. He's particularly special to us, I will say, Joe counters. He was a big part of the family feel, raised a lot of rookies, is a close personal friend to many of the crew, and especially Andy. That was always going to be a hard one. Fair, Nikki says. His expression softens as he adds, Booker was always very good with family. I'm glad to hear he kept mentoring rookies. Joe watches him curiously. After he'd become friends with Nikki, he'd learnt something about Nikki billeting with Booker during his rookie season. But that had been in the before of Booker's life, and Joe had never pressed him on it. He might ask Nikki about it later. Now they're closer. Nikki blinks before focusing back on Joe. You can see it when someone's off or has something external going on, he says, sounding like an analyst again. It affects the team more because we're so attuned to each other. There's minimal separation between off and on pitch, the amount of time we spend together outside of Quidditch. Joe looks at him sharply. He can't tell if Nikki is using the royal we or critiquing them specifically. It's true, they do spend an exorbitant amount of time together. Did Nikki... Was this him trying to say... You think we... Joe says, gesturing between them, and Nikki sits up, eyes going wide. Oh, no, I didn't mean... He starts, rushed. He reaches across the counter and grips Joe's hand. Joe nearly spills his tea all over himself. I mean, I'm the one crashing at your house all the time. I don't mind, Joe says, even though he really means, I fucking love it, please don't stop. Nikki gives him a tentative smile, and Joe smiles back at him until he realizes they're just standing in silence holding hands. Something must show in his face, because Nikki starts and draws his hand back like he's been burnt. They both look away, clearing their throats, before Nikki speaks again. He's definitely blushing now. I just worry, he says. If something really big happens, how it'll affect the team with us being as close as we are. Remember when Ferreira's husband had that accident? We knew he'd be fine. But we were all distracted, not just Ferreira. But, Nikki, Joe says slowly, that's just life, isn't it? Things will happen regardless. Quidditch obviously takes precedence for us, but our lives continue to happen around it. Family, friends, other loves. They'll always be there, in both the good and the bad. We just have to learn to manage that. Not necessarily, Nikki says matter of fact. I don't have anything except Quidditch, and that means little to manage. He makes an impatient noise when he sees the look on Joe's face. You know what I mean, he says, as if that's meant to make it any better. Not everyone has a family like yours, Joe. I know, Joe says, sighing. I guess it's just... He pauses, casting around for a way Nikki will understand. It's a cost-benefit analysis, isn't it? He says, and Nikki raises an eyebrow, catching on to his play. With the team, external things are always going to happen and affect someone, which might then affect all of us. But is that worth the payoff when it also brings such benefits? He looks directly into Nikki's face then, and aches to take his hand again. Are the benefits worth it to you? He says. He can't say exactly what they're referring to anymore. Is it worth the risk? Nikki is silent for a long time, just watching him. Joe can see every fleck of color in his eyes, wide and inscrutable. More words sit on the edge of his tongue, but he keeps his mouth shut. Is it worth it to you? Do you know how much I'd be willing to risk for you? I see, Nikki says finally, voice soft. His hand is mere centimeters from Joe's on the counter. Thank you, Joe. I'll think about it. All right, Joe says, unsure what he's saying all right to. He feels slightly dazed, like something's exploded next to him without a sound. It's either that, or just the way Nikki is looking at him. Not quite smiling, but calm now, considering. He's always loved Nikki's focus, the way Nikki thinks through things. Right now, he can't quite figure out where Nikki's mind is. But that's fine. He can wait. It's worth it to wait. For someone who proclaims to be so singularly focused on Quidditch, Nikki certainly seems to have the busiest extracurricular calendar in December. Joe notices because they spend so much time off pitch together that it's immediately obvious when they don't. There are a lot of charity events and fundraisers and visiting kids in hospitals as part of the team, and also with the league. Where Joe loves them and attends every one, Nikki is much more selective. He avoids any fancy event he can, but shows up to anything involving children or teenagers. The team is a little surprised by this. Nikki had struck the lot of them as someone who might dislike kids. Instead, he makes a wonderful guest coach and is surprisingly nonchalant when babies throw up on him. He does seem to take it all very seriously, even just the meet and greets. But then again, it's Nikki. He also travels back and forth to Italy a lot, which has Joe very curious by the third time he realizes Nikki has vanished for the day and he can't get hold of him. What were you up to? Joe asks when Nikki lets himself in at 9 p.m. Joe likes to think he's had a busy day and hasn't been waiting for Nikki to get back at all, thank you very much. He's been sketching, and he snaps the notebook shut and tucks it away hastily as Nikki comes in. Luckily, Nikki goes for the kitchen instead, and Joe watches him rummage around for snacks. He thinks he should be more concerned by how Nikki has automatically come back to his place rather than to his own house, considering the hour. He should be, but he's too happy to care. "Hmm?" Nikki says, and then rolls his eyes. "You knew where I was, Joe." "Did I?" Joe frowns. "I don't remember." "I had a meeting I wanted to attend in person back home," Nikki says. "I told you this morning when I left." "What? I don't even remember you leaving." "Well, it was 5 a.m., Nikki allows, coming over with a little cheese board he's made up. Even with snacks, Nikki has flawless food presentation. "Why was I up at 5 a.m. on an off day?" Joe asks. He does vaguely remember being unfortunately cold and conscious in the kitchen, but the details are hazy. "You told me you were still going to work out without me," Nikki says, raising both eyebrows. "I'm assuming that didn't happen." Joe says, scratching his beard. "Did I really say?" "I said," Nikki starts, gearing up for a lecture. "Hey, I'm off to Italy for the day." And you said, "My heaven." Nikki drops his voice in an unflattering impression. Joe kicks at him and Nikki grabs his ankle, undeterred. "And because you'd actually made it out of your room, I said, you promised to still work out without me. And you said, mm-hmm, in an affirmative note after I made you coffee. And then I left. And then you broke your promise." "Okay, come on," Joe protests. Nikki's fingers are warm against the back of his heel, and it's very distracting. I obviously wasn't fully awake to make that promise. That's not fair. In fact, what he does clearly remember is waking up on the couch at 8, cocooned in the throw blanket that still smelled like Nikki from the night before. Maybe he'd buried his face in it and napped for another hour. No one had to know. Besides, a 5 a.m. port key for somewhere so close? That's just masochistic. I'm less likely to be recognized then, Nikki says, shrugging. And I had a lot to do. Actually, he squeezes Joe's ankle before getting up. Joe watches curiously as he pulls out a stack of files and moves to the dining table to spread them out, face growing serious in concentration. Can't that wait? Joe says. You must be knackered. But I remember all the details right now, Nikki replies, as if he isn't a copious note taker. I won't be long. Joe watches him for a couple minutes, watches the way Nikki's fingers run over the pages as he reads, lips pursing, shoulders curving in. When Nikki turns back to his bag, he pauses to smile at Joe, and Joe gets up to join him like he's been hooked. Nikki looks surprised, one hand flattening over the page he's on, but he doesn't ask Joe to move. Looks complicated, Joe says, gesturing to the massive paperwork. It's not so bad. Nikki scratches his signature on some of the neatly marked lines. There's just always a lot happening this time of year. A lot of what? It's not like Nikki to be vague with him. And if he really doesn't want Joe to know, he wouldn't be doing it here. Nikki flips through more pages before he says, I have some personal projects. Joe tilts his head. These look like legal and financial documents, not Quidditch related at all. Outreach? He guesses. Nikki is quiet for a long moment before he says, not looking up, I suppose that's what it's called. Joe props his chin up on his hand. His curiosity is well and truly piqued, but there's something in Nikki's voice that makes him tread lightly. I didn't know you did stuff like that outside the league, he says. Nikki hums, shaking his head a little. I try to keep it quiet, he says. And Joe can't help but smile, like he does every time Nikki shares something with him, private and precious. There's already a lot of projects that use my name for attention or fundraising, and that's fine, but I also... He glances at Joe. I wanted to do something different. That's awesome, Joe says. That makes a lot of sense. So what do you do instead? Nikki makes half the files stack themselves and starts in on the others. He keeps his head down, but his foot presses against Joe's under the table. He hesitates and then clears his throat. I have a private foundation. Oh, nice, Joe says. And you fund projects through that? Mm-hmm, Nikki nods. Some change year to year, but there's a few I've kept since the beginning. He pauses, fingers tapping against the table before he lifts up a file and pulls something free from it. Here, he says, and slides it across to Joe. It's a photograph. There are 20-odd children trying to fit into frame, all in their ragtag best, herded into place by several smiling adults. Joe's not great at guessing ages, but they all look under 10. Some of the older kids are trying to get the younger ones to stand still, while the younger ones just seem to want piggyback rides. They're in some sort of backyard, holiday decorations already up against the building behind them. It's so endearing, Joe can't control his expression, and Nikki laughs softly, hand next to Joe's on the table. When Joe looks up, the expression on Nikki's face makes him forget his words. He sees his own sentiments there, reflected, but also a quiet, fierce pride that makes Nikki's eyes shine. He looks almost defiant, as if expecting Joe to mock him. Joe puts a hand over Nikki's wrist. He wants to take his hand, but that feels like a riskier move with every passing day. Tell me about them, he says, and Nikki's gaze softens. He leans in over the photograph as Joe watches him enraptured. All this time together, and there's always more to discover with Nikki. He loves that about him. We have these communities, Nikki starts slowly, in Italy. Like children's homes, I think they're called here. For children who don't have families or appropriate caregivers right now. It's a complicated thing. But it's what we currently have, and I... His free hand rests on the corner of the photograph like he wants to jump into frame himself. I support a few of these. Knowing Nikki's support is probably a vast understatement, he points at the building in the photograph. This one was badly damaged in the earthquake, he says. None of the children were hurt, thankfully, but it's been a really difficult time. The rebuild finished earlier this year. Still too late by my standards, but... He looks up into Joe's face. It got done, and better, too. It'll be their first holiday with everything done up. They're so close, Joe can see the faint lines Nikki gets when he smiles like this, small but clear. Nikki angles the photograph and starts running a finger over it. Paola, he says, pointing to a little girl with dark frizzy hair, sucking her thumb as she clutches a teddy. I met her when she first arrived, actually. Caterina and Concetta there. Twins, actually, but not identical. They've grown up so much, it's crazy. Kids come and go, obviously, so I haven't met them all. But they tell me Pietro here is a great older brother. He came in a bit later. I think he was 9 when he arrived. He runs through everyone in the photograph, including all the adults, and Joe listens without needing to say a word. It's only when Nikki runs out of breath that he stops and sits back. His wrist is still under Joe's hand. Sorry, Nikki says, going slightly pink. It's been a lot of work, and it was so good to finally see it pay off today. Everyone was very excited. I wanted to share that. He clears his throat. I wanted to show you. Joe doesn't trust himself to speak. He thinks his heart has grown about 3 sizes in the last 10 minutes. Of course, he finally manages. Were you there today with the kids? Nikki shakes his head, his smile subsiding a little. Mainly governance meetings today, he says, and meetings with the educators. He glances down at the photograph and then back at Joe. I'm careful about meeting the kids. They tend to recognize me when they're a bit older, and that's... He makes a face. You know how it can get when we do things like this. It becomes more about us than them, especially on camera. So I'd like to, but... He shrugs. That's not the point. And I don't want to just sweep in every so often, create a fuss, and leave. He laughs, a little wry. My team has been wanting me to go public with it since I established it, and I get that, but it's special, you know? He worries at the inside of his cheek before adding, to me. And the last thing I or the kids need is publicity. I can do that elsewhere and bring in the funding privately. Well, Joe says, squeezing his wrist gently, I'm sure they're very grateful. Children, Nikki says, voice going flat, should not have to be grateful. His fingers curl in on the tabletop. They shouldn't be grateful just to be cared for. His tone has changed so quickly, Joe stares, unsure how to reply. Nikki is staring so intently at the photograph that Joe doesn't want to disturb him. After a moment, Nikki blinks and seems to register Joe's silence. Sorry, he says again, and turns his hand to curl his fingers around Joe's wrist, too. I didn't mean to... I know you don't mean... It's all right, Joe says. He aches to take Nikki's face in his hand, smooth away the conflict there. It's obviously very precious to you, Nikki, and you've obviously done a lot of hard work, and I know you don't want credit for that, but... It's amazing, nonetheless. I'm just glad these kids have that. I have a great team on the ground, Nikki says, smile returning slightly. I try to be as involved as I can, but sometimes I feel like... He gestures to one of his many documents, miming writing. The signature fairy. Joe glances at one of the pages and then squints. Nikki, he says, leaning in, is that a pseudonym? Nikki follows his gaze and then curses, trying to pull the page away. Joe, who boasts some of the quickest reflexes in the league, thank you very much, grabs it before Nikki can and holds it up with his free hand. Nikki, he says, do you sometimes go anonymous by calling yourself Nikki Smith? Shut up, Nikki grumbles, putting his head in his free hand. I was what, 22 when I set that part up? And then they needed a pseudonym for the reference and I blanked. 22? Joe repeats, shaking his head. Okay, fine. I'll let you off the hook. You're just putting us all to shame, you know. Lots of playouters do this kind of thing, Nikki says, shrugging. You do too. Yeah, but not like this, Joe says, returning the page and gesturing across the entire table. He spots a calendar, neatly color-coded and almost completely full. Not the Genovese way. Are you going to rest at all this month? Nikki pulls the calendar towards him and points. I've scheduled in breaks, he says, because of course he has. Joe scans the labels and taps on one he recognizes in the next week. I thought you weren't coming to the gala. Nikki glances at it and makes a face. No, I'm coming. It's the big league fundraiser. I promised my manager I'd go. Joe leans back in his chair, grinning. His interest in the event had just risen exponentially. What are you wearing for it? He asks. Don't think I've ever seen you that dressed up before. Quidditch uniform is dressed up, Nikki mutters, checking his dates. He curses when he realizes how close the event is. Damn it. I meant to get my suit fixed. I think there's a hole in the jacket. Wait, Joe says, narrowing his eyes. How many suits do you own, Nikki? I don't know, Nikki says distractedly, running his wand along the calendar to try and shuffle appointments. I have one for press. Nikki, Joe says, you can't wear that one to a gala. Why not? Nikki is starting to look stressed again, lips pressed thin. Cazzo, I forgot it was so close. He looks at Joe, running a hand through his hair. Do you really think I need another suit? I don't know the first thing about... And I really don't have time. Joe glances back down at the calendar. Can I book this slot in? He asks, pointing at a blue-coated block of time the next day. Nikki scoffs. You don't have to book time with me, Joe, he says, and Joe tries not to preen. I just like to be organized. Cool, Joe says, doodling his name onto the free space. The calendar slot immediately turns gold. Huh. This is going to be fun. This seems, Nikki starts and twists to look over his shoulder. Great, Joe thinks. Now he's staring at his own ass. Now Joe is also staring at his ass. They're both silent for a long moment. This seems unnecessarily fitted, Nikki says finally. But is it uncomfortable? Joe asks. How his voice still sounds normal, he will never know. Surprisingly, no, Nikki says. He raises his arms, testing the jacket, and then stretches down to touch his toes. Joe makes eye contact with Greta, who's standing by with pins and wand in hand. She throws him an amused look, and he makes a, can you believe what I'm working with, face. She winks at him, and he grins back, plucking another complimentary chocolate from the gilded box in front of him, next to the swatchbook of suit fabrics and Nikki's refilling champagne flute. When Greta had asked if he wanted tea, coffee, or champagne, Nikki had repeated, champagne? As if he was testing the sanity of the question. Greta, however, had taken it as his order, and Nikki had been too embarrassed to swap. Luckily, it had relaxed him enough to answer questions and actually try on multiple options. Joe has removed himself from the decision-making process because he thinks Nikki looks ravishing in all of them. Fortunately, Greta has been his favorite tailor since he'd first signed his brand deal with Anaïs and has saved him from many questionable fashion choices over the years. Managing Nikki must be easy in comparison. What do you think? Nikki asked, turning to Greta. The guy may not understand fashion, but he always recognizes competency. She gives him a clinical once-over and nods. I think we're on to a winner, she says, and he tilts his head, fingers adjusting the cufflinks. Joe is very glad Nikki is focused on Greta right now. He's not sure what his own face is doing. And why do you think that? Nikki asks in his analyst voice, and Greta steps in to adjust the fabric. Well, I think this look will be wonderful for the gala, she says, turning his shoulders to show him his best angle. It fits the dress code without just being black tie, but also won't make you stand out too much. Joe tries not to scoff. He knows he'll be distracted all evening if Nikki goes with this option. And also, if we cut you a few different shirts and add some ties, you can swap them around for different events. No need to be Joe and have a completely new suit per function. Hey, Joe says as Nikki laughs, I mix and match. Sure you do, sweetheart, Greta says, rolling her eyes, and Nikki smiles at him in the mirror. All right, he says, nodding. Well, it does seem very functional, thank you. He pauses, face creasing. What does that come to? Nothing for you, darling, Greta says, and ignores Nikki's noise of concern. Let me just go pick out some ties, and you make sure you're comfortable now. She strides off, and Nikki turns, eyes narrowed. Joe, he says, I'm not taking all of this for free. Of course not, Joe says, standing up from the chaise lounge and walking over to him. What do you think, really, aside from it being functional? Nikki frowns, but takes himself in again, fingers running down his lapels. I think, Nikki says, and then pauses, eyes meeting Joe's in the mirror before darting away. I think it looks fine. Joe raises an eyebrow, waiting, and Nikki rolls his eyes, hands sliding into his pockets. I think I look good, he says, and Joe smiles. Ain't that the truth, he says, and Nikki scoffs, but he's smiling now, a little pink in the cheeks. He looks at himself again in the mirror, and then clears his throat, frown returning. So how am I paying for this exactly? Well, Joe says, and Nikki gives him a hard look. Nikki, relax. I've got it sorted, okay? No, Nikki says, starting to unbutton the jacket. Joe actually has to grab his hands before he tries to pull it off and accidentally stabs himself with the multitude of pins hidden in the fabric. Nikki freezes and Joe lets go, but doesn't step back. Nikki shakes his head. That's lovely, Joe, but I can't let you. Honestly, Joe says, I've been the face for this brand for years. We have a really good relationship, and they were super keen to have you wearing them at such a public event. You just have to wear this on the night, and I've sorted the rest. Nikki grimaces, and Joe reaches out to straighten his collar. Listen, he says, and he can feel Nikki's eyes on him piercing. Let me spoil you when it's this easy, yeah? You said it yourself. You've got no time to think about this stuff, and now you won't have to for a really long time. It's a win-win. Joe, Nikki says, and his hands shift by his sides, like he wants to reach out, maybe. Joe looks up and plays his final card. He smiles, slow and wide and hopeful, and can almost spot the moment Nikki's resolve caves. A win-win, indeed. Galladay comes around in the blink of an eye and finds Nikki calling Joe's name up the stairs. Have you started getting ready yet? Joe says, rolling hastily upright in bed. He is, in fact, still in his bathrobe, and had been busy messaging Niall about a hair emergency. Sure have. He hears Nikki stomping up the stairs and curses. By the time Nikki bangs open his bedroom door, he's in front of his mirror, applying moisturizer. Nikki makes an exasperated noise. You're not even dressed, he says, and Joe turns to stare at him. Nikki is still in his workout gear, and Joe gestures at his sweaty everything, no words needed. Nikki scoffs. I'll be ready in 20 minutes tops, he says. You, on the other hand. You wouldn't be nagging me if the girls were here, Joe mutters, leaning in to check his brows. I knew I should have gotten ready with them instead. Then you would have all been late, Nikki says, stripping off his shirt and wiping at his face. He always reverts to locker room nonchalance when working out is involved, and Joe almost stabs himself in the eye with his brow brush. Okay, I'm going to shower, and by the time I get back, you need to be dressed with your hair done, okay? This isn't a drill, Nikki, Joe says. You can't rush perfection. Nikki's laugh disappears with him down the corridor as he heads for the guest bathroom. Joe doesn't actually take that long. His hair is behaving today, thank fuck, and the rest is relatively easy. He had only been late to the gala last year because Booker had showed up at his house drunk, and Joe had had to sober him up on short notice. He doesn't think Booker is going at all this year. He really must check on the bastard before Worlds. Joe is basically ready by the time Nikki reappears, exactly 20 minutes later. Can you help me with these, Nikki says as he comes in, before looking up and stopping short. Joe turns from where he's finalizing his bow tie and watches Nikki blink several times before he says, garbled, my cufflinks? Sure, Joe says, walking over. They've all got Guard logo cufflinks. And Joe takes Nikki's wrist in his hands and fixes his to his cuffs. He can smell the cologne Nikki has on. He's pretty sure it's his own. Joe fumbles with the other cuff and says, hastily, "Oh, do you want a watch? I'll have one that matches, I'm sure." To his surprise, Nikki shakes his head and reaches into his pocket, pulling out a beautiful black piece. Its gold detailing glints in the light, subtle but striking. "Oh, wow," Joe holds out a hand. "May I?" Nikki pauses, finger curling around it for a second before he takes a breath and places the watch carefully in Joe's palm. It's a mechanical one, and Joe holds it up to admire all its moving parts. "Is this a Muggle make?" he asks, squinting at the brand name. "Yes," Nikki says. Joe has the oddest feeling that he's holding a piece of Nikki, heavy in his palm. Nikki's expression is even more intense than usual. "Didn't think you'd go for Muggle accessories," Joe says, and Nikki laughs as he takes the watch back and fits it around his wrist. "It was a gift," he says, as Joe takes his hand to admire it on him. "Who from?" Joe asks, and Nikki clears his throat. "The Le Livres, actually." Joe looks up at him, caught off guard. "Booker?" he says, laughing. "He does have surprisingly good taste, but generally for fakes, I think. This one looks too legitimate for him." "Well," Nikki says, inclining his head in agreement, "it was from him and his wife. I trusted her judgment very much." "Oh," Joe says, and he gets it, he thinks, trying to fit the pieces together. "From your rookie year? That's lasted well." "Yes," Nikki smooths his thumb over the watch face. His expression is soft in the warm light of Joe's room. "It's the only one I have." Joe wants to say something, reach out maybe, assure Nikki that he can share anything with him and Joe will treasure each new piece, safe and soft and precious. Before he can, however, Nikki actually registers the time on the watch and curses, straightening. "Joe," he says, and the moment is broken, both of them springing into action. "I told you we'd be late." "It's really not like Nikki to be late," June mutters, as the team mills around the guest entrance. They're all supposed to walk in together and get photographed in order. They're starting to cut it close. "No, but it is like Joe," Olivia says. Her, June, and Niall are all wearing gowns and complimentary shades of pastel, which they'd actually done by accident and then had really leaned into it. Chaser voodoo at its finest for sure. And they're, "Oh, hell. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Everybody, look." The team turns as one and sees Joe and Nikki hurrying towards them, Joe looking pleased, Nikki looking disgruntled. That in itself is not unusual. What is unusual is, "Nikki," June says as they join the team, "is that you?" "What?" Nikki asks, looking down at himself. "Of course it's me. What do you mean?" "She means," Olivia says, reaching out to tweak his bow tie, "who are you and what have you done with our Nikki who can't even find the right size t-shirt?" "Oh, hey now," Joe laughs. "He never looks bad." "You be quiet," Ferreira says, shoulder checking him. "You've done nothing but cause trouble for our poor Nikki here." Joe gasps in mock outrage. It's the team's favorite pastime now to rib him about Nikki. They have to vent their frustrations over the Genovese Cassani dance somehow, and they're still figuring out how far they can tease Nikki. His reputation amongst players had preceded him, along with his initially silent demeanor and scary murder eyes. He also has a special beater bond with Andy, which is inherently terrifying. When Nikki had stood up after one of Andy's infamous circuses and said, "Great thrill, boss," without a hint of irony, the rest of the team had stared a look of pure fear, while also trying not to pass out. One old school legend is already a lot. Andy and Nikki plotting practices together is a fucking nightmare. But then they'd seen Nikki with Joe, and had watched in awe as Joe slowly drew him out of his singularly focused shell. By October, they'd realized that Nikki was more shy than aloof, and was actually just a massive nerd that didn't want to bore people with his niche interests. Sure, he was insanely intense about Quidditch, even by their standards, but he was also an incredibly compassionate listener with a blink-and-you-miss-it sense of humor. When Moran, their new keeper, had confessed to missing his family back home, Nicky had shown up to their next practice with a massive container of Irish stew, and Moran had looked rather close to tears. They also have front row seats to Joe with Nicky, which is equal parts embarrassing and fascinating. Seekers often define a team more than any other player by virtue of their role and the pressure that brings. Joe seems to manage it by being a limitless force of life, exuberant and extravagant in every emotion. It's a lot to maintain, though, especially when he's actually having a hard time, laughter turning too raucous, or play teetering between risky and insane. Nicky's influence is harder to spot, but Niall notices how Joe's boundless energy hones itself as the season progresses. He's still very much him, presence filling every room he's in, but it's more mindful, more directed. When bad streaks happen, he stays on track, and it's easy for the team to follow his lead. They also have to watch him make an increasing fool of himself around Nicky, which becomes so consistent it feels like a ritual. When that coincides with them playing well, nobody can bear to interrupt. They respect why Joe and Nicky have yet to act upon the obvious thing blossoming between them, but there's only so much a team can take, and they're really starting to push it. Mercifully, their cue comes, and the rest of the team pauses as Joe leads the way onto the red carpet, Nicky beside him. They complement each other like a matching set, so perfectly tailored they look straight out of a magazine. Both suits are black with matching lapels, but Joe's shirt is white, sitting beautifully against his skin, while Nicky is in full black, highlighting his pale features. There's a sharp spike in photographers' calls as they walk on, the carpet exploding with camera flashes. They see Nicky blink rapidly, face tightening until Joe puts a hand low on his back and leans in. He says something that makes Nicky laugh, real and unfiltered, and when Joe pulls back, he looks at Nicky like he's forgotten the photographers even exist. "Tell me someone's betting on them at the holiday party," Ferreira says, shaking his head. "I'll take a Christmas miracle by this point, seriously." The morning of the team holiday party, Joe's kitchen looks like a bomb has gone off in it. Nicky is standing in the midst of it all, looking grim. "Not a word," he says at Joe's incredulous expression. Beside him, three different bowls are mixing themselves at one point, and the heat from the open oven is making Nicky's face pink. That'll be his excuse anyway, Joe knows. "Nicky," Joe starts, and Nicky glares at him. "Tonight's a potluck, remember? Everyone will bring something. You don't have to personally cook for everybody and their families." "I know that," Nicky says grumpily, closing the oven and turning back to the counter. Joe really, really wants to kiss the almost pout off his face, maybe put his arms around him while he cooks, bury his face against Nicky's neck while he smells like cinnamon and spice. Instead, Joe just takes a very long swig of water while Nicky continues with, "But you can't always trust people to do that, and I definitely don't trust some of the rookies cooking. Besides, we have guests who have different dietary requirements, and I don't want them to be left out." Joe thinks about burying himself in the snow outside. Maybe it'll help him calm down. "Can you try this?" Nicky asks and holds out a spoonful of tiramisu filling. Joe, because he's an idiot, walks over immediately. He wonders if he should take the spoon from Nicky, but Nicky just steps in close and raises it to Joe's mouth. Sometimes, Joe really has to wonder what is going through Nicky's mind. There's a prolonged moment of eye contact while he takes the proffered spoonful, and Nicky stares at him so intensely, Joe thinks he might combust, and then, "Oh my God," he says, grabbing the spoon to lick it clean. Nicky makes a slightly strangled noise. "Oh my God, that's delicious." "Not too much coffee?" Nicky asks, and Joe shakes his head, looking around for more. Nicky slaps his hand away before he can dip his finger in the bowl. "No," he says, wand waving menacingly. "And Dramaki specifically requested this. It has to be perfect." "You don't have to win her over with dessert. She already loves you," Joe points out. A timer goes off, and Nicky jumps, trying to locate what needs his attention. There is flour in his hair and a streak of chocolate across his cheek. "All right," Joe says, hands clasped behind his back so he doesn't do anything phenomenally stupid. Let's just take a breath, okay? Now, what can I help with? Niall arrives in the late afternoon to help with final touches. Joe hustles her through to the living room with a finger pressed to his lips. She raises her eyebrows and then widens her eyes at the amount of food already sitting on the trestle tables. "Nikki?" she mouths, and Joe nods. He's trying to look exasperated but seems stuck on fond. Niall rolls her eyes. Joe takes the speaker she'd brought over and fiddles with it, turning the volume right up. "Watch this," he mouths and hits play. Niall is grinning as soon as she hears the jingle.
I don't want a lot for Christmas.
Upstairs, a door slams open and Nikki yells out, "Mi prendi per il culo! Di nuovo! Yusuf, if I hear that song one more time!"
Underneath the Christmas tree,
Joe, I'm serious. Nikki cuts off mid-rant, stopping short in the doorway. "Oh, hi, Niall. I didn't hear you." His eyes widen as Joe grabs her in an exaggerated waltz and starts to dance. "It's traditional, Nikki," Joe shouts over the song's aggressive chiming. "You have to get into the spirit." "Niall has that excuse. You do not," Nikki shouts back as Niall twirls under Joe's arm, laughing. "You don't even believe." But half these songs are just about holidays and love, Nikki," Joe says, dipping Niall so low her hair almost touches the ground. "And I definitely believe in those two things." Once Joe sets her upright again and turns the music down a little, Nikki asks Niall to give the house a critical once-over with him. Anywhere Nikki's been in charge of is immaculate. Anywhere Joe's been is completely over-decorated. "Thought you hated big parties," she says, nudging him. "But you really went all out, huh?" "I didn't," he starts and then clasps his hands behind his back. "I like the team. And I know this event is very important to us, so..." He shrugs. "I wanted to make sure it goes well, that's all." "Aw, Nikki," Niall says, giving his broad shoulders a squeeze. "We love you too," she pauses. "In fact, we love you so much now that your immunity might be wearing thin, just saying." Nikki frowns. "What does that mean?" he asks. But Niall pretends to hear Joe calling for her outside and moves swiftly away. "Niall, what do you mean?" Guests arrive thick and fast, team and crew members traipsing in with partners and kids, and the house fills rapidly with chatter and laughter. Joe and Nikki run a seamless operation from front door to kitchen, Joe on welcome duty, Nikki handling food logistics. Everyone compliments Nikki on his handiwork when they greet him, and Niall watches his anxiety melt into quiet relief. He has definitely ensured a better organized event this year, and front office is especially grateful. She watches the house fill and thinks how much it feels like home, her immediate and extended family all cramming under one roof. She thinks of church and all the events she's missing over the Christmas period. It's a small compromise, perhaps, to be doing what she loves, but still. "Hey," Andy appears beside her and Niall blinks back into focus. "Got news for you." "Only good news, I hope," Niall says, clinking glasses with her. Andy smiles and her expression is softer than usual. "It might just be the lighting. The place is filled with fairy lights." Andy pulls an envelope from her jacket pocket and hands it to Niall, who takes a peek inside and gasps. "No," she says, and Andy laughs. "These must have been a bitch to get." Inside are transatlantic portkey tickets for Christmas Eve. Literally. From just after pregame practice ends and back again later that night. "It's not great timing," Andy says, "and if the time zone jumps throw you off the next day, I'll bench you, but I know how much this time means to you and your family. So..." Niall throws her arms around Andy before she can escape and hugs her tight. Andy lets out a little oof that makes Niall laugh before her arms come up to squeeze Niall back. "Thank you," Niall says before pulling back. "Listen, I've got to call my mom. She'll be ecstatic. Can you make sure no one pranks the boys too badly while I'm away? I have a feeling..." "Oh, they'll be fine," Andy says, smirking. "Go on, I'll hold the fort." Nikki is leaning down to locate one of Ferreira's runaway kids when he feels something brush the top of his head. He stands, hand raising, and feels something floating above him. When he tries to catch it, however, it flits away from him. Strange. Nikki, did you find... Ferreira stops short, eyes fixing above Nikki's head. Oh, my. What is it? Nikki asks, still trying to grab it. It's definitely something charmed, and he's aware of several team members milling around close by, looking suspiciously innocent. Ferreira looks close to giggling. It's mistletoe, I think, he says, and Nikki feels himself go red. This he knows. Can you get it down? He asks, and Ferreira makes a half-hearted grab for it. It seems to be shedding gold glitter as it goes. It's one of those holiday gag charms, Nikki, Ferreira says. More of a hassle to get rid of than just let it wear itself out. It'll be gone in no time. Nikki does not think that's true at all. But then he remembers what Niall had said about his immunity being over and realizes the team is pranking him. It had happened with previous teams, especially as a rookie, but he'd always got less than his peers. People seemed wary of him, maybe, or just more distant. For the most part, Nikki's fine with it. He's not a fan of being humiliated. But with the guard, he feels warm, cheeks heating. It's not bad. So he just rolls his eyes and acquiesces, calling out to Andy when she passes by. Andy, have you seen Jamie? I think Joe found him, Andy replies and then stops. Oh, I see you're the recipient of the mistletoe curse this year. Oh, is traditional? Nikki asks, feeling mollified. Only for the special few, Andy says and sidles up to him. She smirks at his expression before darting in to smack a kiss on his cheek. Happy holidays, sucker. It's at this point that Joe appears next to them, carrying Jamie in his arms. Found him, Joe says triumphantly, returning him to Ferreira. He catches sight of Nikki and freezes, eyes going wide. Oh, dear, he says. Nikki, do you want me to get rid of... Where's your holiday spirit, Alcazani? Ferreira says, bouncing his son in his arms. Either kiss the lad or keep him cursed forever. It's your choice. It's not cursed, Joe says, looking flustered. Nikki feels much the same. Joe nearly backs into Niall, who takes one look at Nikki and throws her hands in the air. I was gone for 10 minutes, she gripes, and then moves toward him, motioning at the team. Come here, you poor bastard. In the ensuing chaos, Joe slips away. Nikki doesn't blame him. He has no idea what he would do if Joe really did kiss him. He can't even think about it without his brain blanking, so he just avoids it, letting the rest of the team have their fun instead. For a prank, it's surprisingly nice. He just gets a lot of bear hugs and kisses on the cheek. It's lovely, really. He can't remember the last time he'd got this many hugs off the pitch. The damn thing is still floating over his head long after dinner. Nikki levitates all the leftover food back to the kitchen so he can box them up. The rookies could always use the meal prep. He's struggling to find space when Joe appears beside him, clearing the counter so Nikki can set the plates down. Thank you, Nikki says, shooting him a smile. The party is still in full swing, but slightly muted from where they're standing, just off to the side. The kitchen feels like their own little world, just adjacent to the chaos. Are you having a good time? Joe asks, taking the empty plates and setting them to wash. He bats at Nikki when he tries to help. Don't be so busy hosting that you forget to enjoy yourself. I am enjoying myself, Nikki says, leaning against the counter next to him. Joe looks warm and cozy in a chunky knit sweater, which is red and green with snitches moving across the stitching. Nikki wants to bunch his hands in it. Actually, he wants to put his hands under it, but that is probably just the wine talking. Definitely the best holiday party I have been to. Joe smiles at him so widely it crinkles his eyes. I'm glad, he says, voice soft. I'm really glad you like the team, Nikki. I'm really glad they like me, Nikki says, which feels a little too honest to say, but it's Joe. And he's always honest with Joe. They pranked me, Joe. Thoughtfully. They pranked me thoughtfully. Joe's eyes stray up to where the mistletoe is still hovering. It seems to be vibrating more than before, because glitter keeps dropping onto him. Joe steps in to brush some off his shoulder, and they both go still when they realize how close they are. Nikki pressed against the counter, Joe just in front of him. Every nerve in Nikki's body sharpens as Joe's gaze drops to his mouth. Joe is definitely looking at. Do you boys need any? Oh, I'm so sorry. They jump apart, almost knocking into some plates. Katie, their equipment manager's wife, is framed in the doorway, hand hovering over her mouth. Not at all, Joe says smoothly. Nikki has forgotten what English even is. Just clearing dinner. We could actually have dessert now, I think. Yeah, for sure, she says, and then they're off again, sending out another stream of dishes. Joe presses a hand against his back when Andy declares Nikki's tiramisu the best she's ever tasted, and Nikki can't help but smile as the team cheers. He knows nothing is ever perfect, but this feels pretty damn close. By the time the party is winding down, Joe can tell Nikki's almost asleep on his feet. He'd had an early start and not stopped all day, so it's little wonder. He'd also been more social during the party than Joe had ever seen him, small-talking with each extended family member. He'd been on a one-man crusade to give every parent a break, and Joe had watched him carry a baby in each arm, while a toddler clung to his back like a koala. Ada had snapped a picture for PR, and Joe has to agree it's one of the best memories of the night. That damn mistletoe is also in the photo, because no matter how many joking kisses he receives, it remains above his head. But the guard is nothing if not full on, and by the time the last guests are clearing out, Nikki is bumping into tables and apologizing to them. Joe shuts the front door for the final time and stands for a moment in the sudden quiet of the house. His music is still playing, but it's soft now, sweet and slow. He hears movement in the kitchen and finds Nikki trying to clean up, bleary-eyed. Seriously, Joe says, putting an arm around him and leading him to the lounge. Nikki's pliant against him, smelling like chocolate and wine. Joe sits him gently down on the couch, and Nikki's hand catches in his sweater and pulls him down too. It's a familiar spot. They've spent many a night on this couch watching movies together or talking. And sometimes just sharing space. Nikki reading and Joe drawing. They've never sat like this, though. Joe with his arm around Nikki's shoulders, Nikki's head leaning against him. They fit together so well Joe doesn't want to move. Great party, Nikki mumbles, and Joe smiles down at him. Great team time. Great team time. Very much so, Joe agrees, and Nikki hums, shifting closer like he's seeking warmth. If Joe didn't know better, he'd call it snuggling. The mistletoe above Nikki's head bumps him in the face, and he blows at it, trying to make it leave without disturbing Nikki. It only shakes its leaves at him mockingly, and he sighs. He knows why it won't go. Knows how to make it leave. Nikki, he whispers just to check. Nikki replies. His eyes are closed. I'm just going to make this go away, okay? He says, and Nikki nods against him, face turned into a sweater. Very slowly, Joe turns his head to press a kiss into Nikki's hair, as gently as he can. It's so much less than what he wants. What they both want, he knows. But it's also perfect for now. The rest will come. He has faith in that, has faith in them. But for now, he draws Nikki close and kisses the top of his head. Nikki makes a contented noise and burrows closer, and Joe smiles into his hair, heart squeezing. Above them, the mistletoe shivers before disintegrating in a soft shower of glitter, finally satisfied. Joe cards his fingers through Nikki's hair to get the glitter out, humming quietly along to the final track, watching the last embers glow in the fireplace. Maybe he says something mumbled against Nikki's hair. Words he's been holding in for a very long time. But it's okay, because by then, Nikki is fast asleep. The end.